We will hear a talk on step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So please help me give a warm welcome to Kyle S. from Santa Barbara, California. Come on in, Kyle.
Okay, Kyle Alcoholic. Yeah, first off, thank you guys so much for having me, and thank you for all my people that came to support me. I love you guys so much. The two most important things I have in my life today is my sobriety date and the relationships that I've been able to cultivate as a result of staying sober and working this program. You guys are the real treasures that I have in my life. And I'll throw out this little disclaimer, I guess, before I get all about respecting traditions of meetings. I can read the room. I can be a chameleon when I need to be. You tell me to dress nice. Cool. No problem. No curse words. You got it. One of the things that I'm very adamant about is sharing my truth about my drug usage, right? We talk about no outside issues. And to me, that's not an outside issue. Drugs and alcohol are laced throughout the big book. Don't take my word for it. Go read yourself. Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, everybody loves to quote, acceptance was the answer, but read the rest of that guy's story. He was a doctor shooting himself up with amphetamines and Michael Jackson medicine and trying to find the magic combination. And, it's like, if anybody tries to give you a problem about talking about, drugs or anything like that, it's like, it's really my belief that, if Bill and Bob were alive in modern day 2023, those guys would be garbage cans. They'd be getting whatever they could get their hands on, right? You're telling me that Bill, with his writhing nerves, right, drug his mattress downstairs in case he flung himself outside of the window. You tell that guy, hey, Bill, here, smoke this stuff. It'll calm you down. It'll relax you. You can sleep better. Here, take these pills. It'll ease your anxiety so you can go to work. You're really telling me that that guy would go, oh, no, I'm a real alcoholic. Pure, get that dirty stuff away from me. I'm pretty sure Bill would be like, give me that right now. As a matter of fact, give me the whole bottle. I want it right now. So, and when I share it, I don't really like to go all the way back into my childhood. If I could give a 2-hour pitch, I'd give you every little detail about my life, but I don't. I try to stick to the poignant points here. Because I really don't think that I'm alcoholic because my mom was this or my dad was that. I think it's kind of luck of the draw. I've been dealt this disease, the spiritual malady. Some people got to wear glasses. Some people have diabetes. I have asthma. I have to walk around with an asthma inhaler every day of my life. I was just dealt this disease. And what my disease of alcoholism looks like is it's my belief that my resting natural base level is just much lower than the average human beings. I think normal people find it, they kind of tend to feel okay on a day-to-day basis. Maybe they have a good day, maybe they have a bad day, something makes them happy, something makes them sad. But, at that resting level, I think they're okay. Whereas at my resting level, I'm not okay. I need something to make me feel better. I need outside stimulation just to make me feel okay. So whenever I do anything or whenever I put anything into my body that makes me feel okay, makes me feel good, I'm just going to do it at an uncontrollable level, right? So alcohol was absolutely my first love. I definitely drink alcoholically. I've got a criminal rap sheet that'll testify to that. But I like to smoke meth alcoholically. I like to do heroin alcoholically. Women, video games, sports betting, the gym, you name it. And I'm still that way to this day. It's not like I work these steps and my brain reorganizes itself and I'm different on a biological level. No, I still have the same instincts. I still have the same motives and desires and all that kind of stuff. I've just found a new well to drink from, and that's AA and the 12 steps. I work this program alcoholically. I do a whole lot of AA. And it's never because I want to be sober. I never wake up and go, oh man, I'm going to get loaded today. The obsession has been removed a long time ago. I do a lot of AA for relief. I do it because it makes me feel good. I'm a fiend for feeling good no matter what it is, right? And the cool thing about this AA stuff is I never get a tolerance to it. With all that other stuff, man, I can never get that same stimulation that I got when it was working for me. I get to that place where I'm trying to find the magic combination, the magic usage, frequency and all that. And I'm just basically trying to feel normal. I'm not even feeling good, right? But this AA stuff, it always hits, right? I'll never take a guy through the steps, watch them get sober, get out of sober living, get a career, get their kids back, get married and go, that guy kind of sucked. That one wasn't that fun. That was a bad batch. Never. It's not happened to me. Not one time. It that hits every single time, right? I'll never speak. I'll never lead a meeting. I'll never make an amends and go, this stuff's getting watered down. It's kind of old. Time to move on for something else. Like, nope. It hits for me every time. And the second main difference between using drugs and alcohol as my solution to life and using, AA and the 12 steps is when I'm using drugs and alcohol as my solution to life, very, very quickly, my problems pile up on me and become astonishingly difficult to solve. That is 100% the reason why I'm here. If that didn't happen, there's no way I would ever even consider getting sober, right? If I could go to work and have a good attitude and be productive and get off work and smoke a little weed, barbecue, watch some football, drink a few Modelos, smoke a little Crystal on Friday, tweak out Friday and Saturday, sleep it off on Sunday, show up to work on Monday, ready to go. That sounds like a wonderful life to me, but unfortunately that's not how it works for me. That's not in the cards for me, right? And so I'm the type of alcoholic, I need a lot more help than just staying sober. I'm not one of these functioning alcoholics where, went through college and did well and I get sober and I go back to the wife and kids and pay the mortgage and show up to my job on Monday. Like, I've never done any of that. I didn't even finish continuation high school, right? I can't really do anything. I've never been self-sufficient. I made it to 28 years old, never being self-sufficient, never even like renting a room somewhere, just being a parasite. And that's the beauty of the 12 steps is it says in our literature that the discovery of spiritual principles would solve all of our problems, right? So being relieved of the obsession, that's a great start, but all of my problems, that's amazing. And so what's this spirituality that we're talking about here? We hear people all the time talk about this is a spiritual program, not a religious program. And when I'm new, I'm like, okay, what does that even mean? That sounds lofty. It sounds profound, something crazy to share in a meeting. But I thought spirituality was like, some chick hula hooping around a fire or like messing around with astrology and crystals, smoking DMT. I thought that was spirituality. But no, we're talking about the practicing of spiritual principles, right? So what is a spiritual principle? So to me, it's like a law of the universe, right? It's like physics. It's an unbreakable, unnegotiable thing, right? So it's like honesty. I can't pick it up. I can't buy it from the store. I can't see it, but I know what it is. It's a concept that I can practice in my life for better living. So it's the same thing with the rest of these principles: acceptance, tolerance, compassion. If we want to get really advanced, forgiveness, that's some black belt AA right there. But it's there for better living and if I want it, right? And so when I learn to apply these to my life, things go better for me. I feel better and my life gets better. And it's my personal theory that my goal here is to make my reality as good as possible so that I can enjoy it and I don't have to escape it, right? Because I took my life to such a low degree that of course I have to dump massive amounts of substances into my body just to feel good with where I'm at on a daily basis. So I started drinking and using late in terms of AA standards. You hear all the crazy stories about, I was 4 and beat up my uncle and drank his whiskey. And I was, carpet surfing for drugs before I could even walk and that kind of stuff. And not me. Maybe I was 14, 15 years old in high school. And I think the best way I could describe myself before discovering drugs and alcohol was I wasn't like a dorky kid, but I was just painfully introverted. I was like that fly on the wall, right? You wouldn't really know if I was there, if I wasn't. I had this really thick overthinking going on in my head. I couldn't just relax. I had to overthink every single thing that I said and did and all that. And lo and behold, that, pour a little liquor in me and I go from this shy introverted person to like, I'm the guy that I always wanted to be. I'm like a combination of James Bond, Dave Chappelle, and Mike Tyson all wrapped up into one. I can talk to women. I can fight people. I can steal bottles. I can tell jokes. Everybody seems to like me. I ran with that. 16 to 20 is what I would consider the party years. I would drink every day. I'd do a lot of cocaine. I would eat ecstasy like Flintstones vitamins. But I would demonize the harder stuff, right? When I'm drinking and I'm partying, I'm having a good time. Like, you see people doing meth or heroin and you never like, oh man, that guy hasn't slept in 8 days. That looks like a way better time. Like I need to do that. So I had these lines in the sand drawn of things that I wouldn't do. And, one by one, all of those lines got crossed, right? If I had more time, I'd tell you about each one of those stories. But all these things that I once demonized became normal for me, right? Well, you know, what was normal for me just became lower and lower. So, you know, getting loaded and raging and just getting high, that was never really the goal. The goal was I was trying to find the right lifestyle, the right substance, the right combination to manage my life and be successful, right? I went from the party stuff to the heroin. I got off the heroin. I just started doing a lot of meth instead. And no matter what the lifestyle or the substance was, it was always that same boomerang effect that Bill talked about. It worked great in the beginning, and then it came back and it cut me to ribbons. You know, with the alcohol and the party stuff, in the beginning, it was great. I was really popular. I had a lot of friends for the first time in my life. I was getting girls. Everybody seemed to like me, but then everybody else graduated and I didn't. I'm getting locked up constantly, and I'm this old, lurky, unwelcome hanger-oner at high school parties. It became a very lame look. And, you know, when I got into the opiates, I felt like I found this life hack. You know, that was where liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. You know, I had fallen into a deep depression and my grandma had just died. And that was like my closest person. I just moved down to Oceanside. I had no one to hang out with. I was going through a really rough breakup. And I'm not one to feel sorry for myself, right? If I'm feeling bad, I'm going to feel better one way or another. And I'm still like that to this day. But at that point in my life, there was no go to a meeting, call another alcoholic, do some service work, pray, meditate. Like, I had none of that. I didn't even know that existed. So I started using opiates just to cope with how I was feeling on a daily basis. It was no longer recreational. And it worked great. I thought that I'd cracked the code. I could go through the worst of a circumstance, the worst breakup. My grandma could die. My dog could die. I could be facing homelessness. But as long as I got a bag on me, the old fierce determination of when comes back every time. But then I'm getting a tolerance. I'm starting to experience what getting dope sick is like. I'm running out of stuff to sell. I'm having to deal with the flakiest, shadiest people all the time. It became extremely unmanageable. And, you know, and then with the amphetamines towards the end there, I discovered my love of writing. You know, I went back to school and I decided that I was going to be the next Hunter S. Thompson, Charles Bukowski. You know, I had my teachers gas me up, telling me how great that I was. And it was wonderful in the beginning, right? You know, I'm writing, I'm creative, I'm having all this fun stuff. I feel like I've unlocked this genius that I never knew I had. But then I'm getting weirder and weirder by the minute. And towards the end there, I'm not being productive at all. All I'm really doing is playing video games for hours on end, watching porn for like 10 hours at a time, and crawling around on the carpet, you know, smoking toenails and dog shit, just trying to, you know, stop for, you know, trying to hoping it did something to me. And I reached a point in my life, if I could have stayed loaded and I could have kept a roof over my head, I would have. But the gig was up. There was no more grandma's house left to go to. My dad was done with me. No more fronts left from my the plug. Nothing left to sell. I was about 130 pounds. And they say your bottom is where you decide to stop digging. And for me, it was homelessness. There's a lot of people in AA way tougher than I am. You know, call me pampered. That's where I drew the line. I've detoxed enough at grandma's house. I'm not going to go do it in the bushes. So I grew up to go to rehab. And it was just kind of my next move to stop from being homeless. You know, I wasn't sold on being sober the rest of my life or anything like that. You know, I thought I was just going to go on some nice little vacation, go to Passages, Malibu, and ride around on horses and get massages and eat sushi and all that. You know, which wasn't the case. I ended up going to a really gnarly work camp, behavior modification, rehab, all that. But part of me was, yeah, I was lucky enough that I had some friends who I partied really hard with, who in my mind were way worse off than me, who they got sober before me and they got really involved in AA and they made this thing look attractive. One of them in particular tried to 12 step me and take me to a handful of meetings and sat me down in a Del Taco and told me how great AA was and being sober. And it was kind of that Bill and Ebby experience where I was kind of like, I can see that this guy believes what he's telling me and I can see the change in him, but I can still drink on the weekends. Like, I just wasn't quite convinced yet, but he had planted the seed. So when that time came, I was like, okay, what's that stuff Lucas was talking about? And so I came in here with the mentality of like, you know, I don't know about being sober the rest of my life. That was a large pill I couldn't swallow, but I decided to give it a year. Right. And this is what I believe my first unofficial third step was, right? It was my mentality. It was my attitude, right? I said, you know what? While I'm there for that year, I'm going to take every single suggestion. I'm going to work every step. I'm going to do it by the book, because I didn't want to come in here and half-ass it and leave stuff out and then go back out and we get unloaded and wonder, does that AA stuff work or not? I wanted to thoroughly investigate. That way, when it didn't work, I could go out and get loaded in peace and know that, you know, AA is a bunch of nonsense and move on with my life. So I came in, and I think my best quality when I was new was I was observant. I wasn't sold on any of this. I thought it was some wacky, weird stuff, just like most of us. But I kept hearing the same thing over and over and over again. You know, you come to find when you get into AA and you stick around, there's no sage wisdom here. There's no mysteries. This isn't like Scientology. You get 10 years sober, we'll pull you in the back. Oh, hey, here's the real stuff. This is the real stuff. We open the coat. We tell you the deal right there from the gate, from your first meeting. And the story that I heard was that I was suicidal. I was depressed. My kids wanted nothing to do with me. I was, you know, fired, bankrupt, homeless, et cetera, et cetera. I surrendered. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps. It was the best decision I ever made. I'm happier than I've ever been. My life's going better than it's ever gone before. So you tell me how great you feel when you do all this AA stuff. I'm like, say less. Let's go. Like, what else do I got to do? Nobody ever really had to kick me in my ass to work a program. Like, I'm desperate to feel better. I hate how I feel when I'm in untreated alcoholism. So I got busy, and I remember doing my third step in the back of my sober living at the little smoking section. And my sponsor said, all right, we're going to hit our knees and do this third step. And mind you, it's a sober living. There's like one random guy smoking a cigarette within a 30 feet radius. And I was like embarrassed. I didn't want to do it. He's like, we're going to hit our knees and say this third step. And I'm like, well, I'm all embarrassed. I don't want to do it. And the only reason I did it was because he would do it with me. And so we got down, we hit our knees, said our third step prayer, and we get up, and he's like, yeah, you feel that? You feel better? And I just bullshitted. I was like, yeah, I feel great. I literally just felt like I said some words. I didn't really feel much different. But I continued to do it every day, right? As my sponsor says, you know, the no had been beaten out of me, right? I just continued to do that. And I was waiting for some voice to start pinging me every day, like, hey, Kyle, like, go put in a job application, you know, go to the gym right now. You know, call this person. And that never really happened for me, right? And so now, like, the way that I view a third step, I'm a simplification guy. I think the God higher power thing is the most overthought, over intellectualized part of this entire program, right? It's just an attitude. Am I willing to do this work? Am I willing to try? I love how they lower the bar to AA. You don't even have to believe in any specific thing, but are you willing to be open and have a decent attitude and try to get on board with what everybody else is doing? That's all it takes, right? And so for me, you know, a proper third step is demonstrated through action, right? I think that the most simple way that I've heard it explained, the best way to do a third step is to start working on your four step. It's it, that simple. Because how can I hit my knees, say that I've turned my will and my life over to a higher power, and then get up and go sit on my ass and watch Netflix for 10 hours and play video games and do the same exact things that I've done for the past 20 years? No, I have to get up and demonstrate through my action that I'm going to do things different, right? And so when I was in sober living, I really learned to take what I like to call the dumb guy approach. I'm always talking about this. I really like it. And, because the smart guy and the dumb guy come into AA, you know, you people have been around a long time, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And what the smart guy do? Wants to analyze and pick apart and question everything and has to know the science behind it and how it works and why it works before they're willing to actually do anything. And they just think themselves into misery, right? Whereas the dumb guy, he doesn't even have a second thought about any of this stuff, right? You just tell him to pray. Okay. You know, go to these meetings. Okay. You know, write out this stuff. You know, okay, go read this stuff. Okay, go pay back that money you owe. Okay, yeah, go check in with your parents. Okay. They just do it. And when they do it, they don't care how it works or why it works. They just know that they're feeling better, so they continue to do it, right? And so it's like when I was doing drugs, when I was, you know, putting big old lines of crystal up my nose, I didn't need to know the science behind it. I didn't care how the dopamine and the serotonin floated around in my brain. All I knew is when I did that, there was an effect produced. But I'm going to come into AA and I got to pray on my knees. What? Why? No, I'm a dumb guy, man. You tell me to do something, you know, from a credible source. Okay, I just do it. And I really learned what the whole one day at a time thing was about. I used to think one day at a time meant white knuckling it. You know, one day at a time, you can drink just not today, right? And it's like, I guess so, or I'll sit on my hands. But what about tomorrow? What about the rest of my life? If I got to live the rest of my life like that, I might as well pick up right now and try to figure it out. But no, that's not what it is at all. It's taking life one day at a time. It's taking the actions one day at a time. So at the end of the day, when my head hits the pillow, did I do everything that I needed to do that day to get to where I need to be? Yes. Then cool. I aced it. I can have peace of mind right then. I literally did the best that I could that day. So that's the cool thing about AA, spirituality, 12 steps. It's not like, am I spiritual? Am I not spiritual? Do I have it? Do I not have it? It's, am I on the path or am I not on the path? And I've been on the path ever since I started this thing. I've never really had to recommit or rededicate. I love this thing. It makes me feel good. So I just continue to do it. And that first year for me, it was really fun and exciting. And, you know, once I got over that initial hump of before the obsession had been removed, you know, after that point, it was fun for me. I've never been a normal functioning member of society before. I didn't know how good it felt to be self-sufficient. You know, when I first started paying my own rent at the sober living, that was the best money I've ever spent in my whole life. I took such pride in that I live at New House 3 and I pay my own way there. That felt so good. You know what's soul crushing is when you're almost 30 years old living at your grandma's house and people are like, oh, where are you staying? We live. And you're like, oh, I'm my grandma's. I'm helping her out. You know, I'm just helping her out around there. She needs my help. You know, as it, you know, I'm just helping her die sooner. I'm just a parasite turning her house into a trap house. You know, that is soul sucking. And so then about 9 months sober, I get a car, right? And it's the hoopiest little hunker you've ever seen in your whole life, but it's mine. I did it. And I had a lot of pride in that. And then I get out of sober living. I'm renting a room for the first time in my life, about 30 years old, never done this before. You know, being sober outside of a structured environment where I wasn't getting drug tested, that was like an extreme sport for me for a while. I felt just every day was like an adrenaline rush doing that. And then, you know, I get my first sober relationship and it's really sparkly and shiny and new. But what happened for me is after a while, it kind of loses its sparkle, loses its shine. It's like, all right, Kyle's got his life together. Now what? I can only ascend so much, right? I can only get my life in order so much. And if I'm going to stay in this program, I have to be passionate about it. It has to stimulate me. It has to be the sufficient substitute of the drugs and the alcohol when they're working on their best day. And what keeps me in this program ever since that first year has been working with others. It's the funnest thing I get to do in this whole world, pre or post sobriety, laying out the kit of spiritual tools, taking a step back, and just watching what these guys do with them, because no two people's recovery is the same. I love watching the takes these guys get on recovery. I love seeing them get their life in order. You know, I recently, one of my guys, he'd been, you know, expelled by his sister, written off, didn't want nothing to do with him. And she just had him ordained and he married her and her husband about a month ago. And I'm like, man, that will never get old for me. I love that kind of stuff. And these days I work a non-negotiable program. I always hear people talk about, you know, the no matter what club, I don't pick up no matter what and all that. And like, to me, that just sounds like white knuckling it, right? Because the thing is I have alcoholism. I do pick up no matter what, no matter how good I'm feeling, no matter how bad I'm feeling, no matter what I stand to lose or gain or what my circumstance is or where I'm at, I can be locked away in jail. I will pick up. I will get loaded every time. So instead, I do what it takes to stay sober no matter what. I pray and I meditate every day, no matter what. I make my meetings no matter what. I try to sponsor as many men as I possibly can, no matter what. I say yes to recovery requests, no matter what. And I think that's why I get to live the good life that I have today. So in terms of what it's like now, you know, I came in for the material stuff. I came in because I wanted to not be homeless, maybe get an apartment or car or decent job. You know, those were the kind of promises that I was after. And I've come to find that if that's the stuff that I got out of this program, I'd be extremely shortchanged because I can have it. I can have the pad on the beach, the girl, car, money, job, all that kind of stuff. And if I'm not putting AA first, if I'm not helping other people, if I'm not enlarging my spiritual life, all that stuff means nothing to me. I'll throw all that stuff away for a bag or a bottle like that. No problem. But I can live at the sober living on a bunk bed in a room full of a bunch of guys stoked on life, excited to see what my higher power has for me that day. So the best things I've gotten out of this program are the intangibles. And the number one thing that I'm always talking about, it's called a life of purpose for me, right? Because for me, I never really understood normal people who would, you know, get up and go to work and come home and watch Wheel of Fortune, Jeopardy, and then get up and do it all over again. It just felt like waiting to die, and it didn't really scratch my itch of existence. I needed something a little bit more. And so what my life of purpose looks like today is, so like, you know, typically what happens when an alcoholic gets sober? Parents aren't getting the phone call home. Hi, your child's died of a fentanyl overdose. People aren't crashing cars. People are staying out of jail, prison. Families are reunited. People are able to keep their promises. So positivity ripples out, right? So if I come into this program and I do a proper third step, right? And what I mean by that is I say, okay, I'm going to put all my eggs in one basket. I'm just going to do this AA stuff to the best of my ability. I see you there, Sonny. Thank you. I'm going to do this AA stuff to the best of my ability, get my life in order, and try to help as many other people as possible and just see what happens, right? And so if I do that, and at the end of the day, I help 10 people get sober, and then each one of those people helps 10 people get sober, through the ripple effect, we're actually able to make a difference in our corner of the world. And for me, that's the most important thing in this whole world, right? Because my biggest fears in life, it's not, you know, death, relapse, public speaking, any of that stuff. My biggest fear in life is regret. I always lived in that world of tomorrows. You know, next semester, I'll sign up for school. After this SAC, I'll go to detox. Tomorrow, I'll get that job application in. And my worst fear is being old and smoked out on my way out of this world, looking back on my life and going, damn, tomorrow never came. I never changed my actions. Of all the different things that I could do with a human life, that's what I did. I was a taker. I chased immediate gratification of the grave. The world was literally a worse place with me in it. And because of this super simple program that I don't have to figure anything out, I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I just got to come in here and start doing what everybody else is doing. I've got no doubt when it's my time to go and I get to review my life, I can welcome death and know that I lived a worthwhile life and there's no other way that I would have wanted to spend it. So I think I'll wrap up a couple minutes early here, but thank you guys again so much for having me out on this pre-Turkey Day morning.